Welcome one and all to what remains of the week here at the Damage Report with me, John Derola, and Brett Ehrlich returning once again. How's it going, Brett?
I'm so happy to be here in the neighborhood, and I just am glad to be joining my friend John Iderola back on our old stomping grounds, as opposed to this weird moment where both of us had to do the Young Turks on a Wednesday. I had to present stories. I was a little rushed. I thought about it all night.
But it was a good show. What are you talking about?
It was a great show. It was better than the normal trash we put out here on this network, but 100%. I still have I'm near perfection, but only me, the Lord Jesus Christ, and Michael Jordan in the late 90s were perfect. Mid 90s.
Most of that checks out. Anyway, what you should know is that while Brett is being very polite right now, he was yelling at me before the show. He was being mean because I was late, because I was working on other stuff that I definitely have to do.
John, anyway. You have an excuse. I was almost late today because, my excuse is I don't remember my alarm going off, but then the Candy Crush style game that I play gave me 2 hours of free lives. So I genuinely had the thought, I will be late to the show today. Because I need to get crack those jellies and use it to upgrade this mansion, Homescapes. It's amazing.
Is it Candy Crush or is it Homescapes? Now it's just it's going from game to game.
It's very obviously copying Candy Crush, but it's a different game called Homescapes, where every level you pass, you get a credit. So then you can go and be like, I want to do marble in the foyer.
I think that that is a great design for an app in the modern era, where that's the best that you could hope for in terms of home ownership for most people, unfortunately. We're gonna jump into the show. While we do that, I want all of you to debate which is worse, Brett's addiction to Candy Crush or my addiction to candy. Which of those two things is worse long term? Anyway, we do have other things that we're gonna be talking about other than candy, shockingly. We're gonna be talking about some politics. It's a new thing for us. We're gonna dip our toe in it and see what we think. But anyway, there's been a lot going on. We're gonna be focusing on some of the moves that Ron DeSantis has been making recently. This is a week where, in theory, it should be a good week for him. He's trying to take down Trump. Trump has been charged with dozens of crimes, but it's not a good week for Ron DeSantis. And we're gonna demonstrate that in a few different ways. We're gonna do a little bit of a roundup of some of what's been going on with some extremists out there across the country. And we might take another look at Donald Trump's favorite non-lawyer lawyer. And will Knight Rider be rebooted inside of your car? We're gonna find out about it. Oh, also, I forgot about this totally.
Please, yes. Please, while John does whatever he's doing.
All over the place. Garbage people of the week. We're gonna be doing it a little bit later on. Two things on that. One, as I've been saying recently, if you're on the linear platforms listening on the podcast, you hear me pitch this constantly and you almost never actually find out who the garbage people are. Well, go to the YouTube page and you'll find out. And if you're curious about the community garbage people of the week, because people have been voting for the past few days, every Friday I put up a special set of commentary, a little video on the community garbage people at tiktok.com/thedamagereport. So you can definitely check that out. It'll be going up in just a few hours. With all that said, Brett, you want to do this thing?
Whether I do or not, you've been more than kind.
I like that version of it. Send us your messages, everybody. Hit the like button. We're going to jump into this. Let's start with this. I'm going to guess, people, that not a lot of news shows today are going to lead with this story. But oh, does it just annoy me so much. You know how everybody loves going to the car dealer? Everybody's just, I just want my car to break down so I can go through the process of buying a new one through a person. No, not so much. People hate that stuff, which is why the idea of auto manufacturers selling direct to the consumer has been popular for quite a while, and more people are looking for that. We buy everything else online. Why shouldn't we be able to do that with our cars? Well, there's a good reason why we shouldn't be able to do that with our cars, because the dealers don't like that. And so they pour money into politicians, and then politicians corruptly give them what they want. And we have a great example of that with Ron DeSantis, who just signed a law that blocks most automakers from using a direct-to-consumer sales model. But it's actually maybe slightly more corrupt than that, because it doesn't block everyone from doing direct-to-consumers. It allows some, but again, only because he's been heavily lobbied by those manufacturers. So it has a carve out for electric only automakers, meaning that Tesla, as well as Rivian, which has started selling cars fairly recently, Lucid as well, are still allowed to sell their cars directly to consumers without getting a third party dealership involved. But legacy automakers that sell electric vehicles still have to use dealerships. So this is amazing and corrupt in like multiple directions. As we're gonna show you, he and other Republicans in Florida have been heavily lobbied by the car dealer network. So that's why they're doing this at all. But then he also likes Elon Musk. Elon Musk, of course, helped him launch his presidential bid. And so Elon Musk gets to do it. He doesn't have to abide by the other rules. And it, look, it benefits Rivian and Lucid as well, but they're very small in comparison to Tesla, at least as of right now. So the whole thing, Brett, just seems so corrupt. And it's the sort of thing where, like, maybe this is just me. I don't think it is. Nobody likes this. No regular person would want this. And yet he can do it. He gets paid, and he appears to not be likely to suffer any sort of consequences for it.
Well, this is one of the most fascinating discussions that makes you question your own positions on, question whether there are analogs to your positions on other things. Because okay, no one likes paying more for a television. So you would think that most people would want a law, a global economic setup that lets you pay the least for a television. But a lot of us also want to keep jobs in America. And so we put up protectionist tariffs, which is counter to the thing we all want to do. And so in this situation, like, it would cost you less money, but you're going to kill jobs in America if you have a globalization approach to the economy. That's not too different from what I can think, and maybe you can open my eyes to ways it's different. To, you know, there a way to keep jobs in America of people selling cars is to have these extra setups and protect legacy institutions like the American job, which is technically inefficient, and the dealer, which is technically inefficient. The difference is one raises prices and the other would lower. I guess protecting both raises prices on the average American and makes them do stuff that they don't actually want to do, while protecting jobs that are in America, which there it is in a small industry, the dealers.
I'm glad that you have brought this up, because sometimes on this show we'll reach a point where you will be frustrated with me having apparently said something that from your point of view makes no sense whatsoever. And it is rarer still that I get to feel that exact same way. No, that's not the same thing at all. Look, broad strokes, sure. Arrows point in the directions in those examples. And by the way, I'm not saying like that we shouldn't have a debate about, you know, where things are produced and how that affects prices and everything. But the dealer network at this point, if we maintain it just to maintain jobs, and I'm going to guess that the new car sale part of a dealer network is not a massive number of jobs. But let's say that it was. Maintaining it just to maintain jobs is an utterly artificial, like, you could just say then, okay, then we're gonna import products from China, but every product that's imported from China, we're gonna set up a new series of big box stores that you have to walk into and buy them there rather than buying them directly. Hey, that'll create jobs. There's all sorts of utterly
artificial.
That's
different. That's a new thing. I'm saying protecting jobs so you don't sabotage
the industry. I understand that. But the thing is, dealerships might have been needed for people to like learn about cars or whatever back in the 1950s or something. It is simply technologically not necessary. You couldn't have done direct to, you know, consumers or whatever. Although to be fair, dealers
you
have been
absolutely obvious. Could, because you can go find a Tesla in the mall. It's a dealership. It's just run by the manufacturer.
No, I understand what you're saying. Now you can. I'm saying that for the most part, in terms of like direct online sales, it wouldn't have been possible 70 years ago. And the reason you don't have Ford dealers owned by Ford 50 years ago is because the dealers have been doing this sort of getting legislation passed in favor of them for decades and decades.
This is false because
is false?
Well, so, just because of the because of commercials. Instead of the internet, you had commercials. You could have called a number to buy the car. You could have, they could have put ads in the, and this happens. So as a person, as a veteran of the one-time veteran of the automobile advertising industry, If you guys want to watch a dope ass commercial, go watch the Nissan Juke donut action and watch yours truly jump through a window. There are two sets. Currently, there's two sets of commercials that happen. So you think of the cool commercial with Robert Downey Jr. and some really hot guy in a blue suit jumping through a window. That's put out by Nissan. And then you see the Toyota commercials where it's just people in front of a white background pointing at numbers and going like 4.3% APR financing. That would be great. Those are done by the dealers. But the messaging,
I understand all of this.
And yeah. I guarantee you that the car manufacturers want, in many ways, want to take over that industry and consolidate it for themselves and run the whole damn thing. That's what Elon Musk wants to do. And I'm not saying that this is a bad idea. I'm just struggling to justify it for the American job market. And I'm saying that, especially as the analog goes toward like protecting manufacturing jobs in America, which if you follow how what would make it more efficient would disappear the same way that I think when I walk into a car dealership and I hate life, I do want that to completely disappear.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And again, from 100 miles up, you're talking about efficiencies or whatever, but it is very much like it, we're not talking about just broad categories. You're talking about you can directly look how much extra are people paying, how much more inconvenience are they having to maintain X number of jobs. If X jobs is 100 million, then sure, you leave it there. But if it's a small number of jobs and a massive inconvenience and a massive inefficiency, then why would you maintain that? And why would you especially maintain it when the only way it can be maintained is through this legal protection racket effectively that they've set up where they buy out politicians to get them to do stuff that they know almost none of their constituents. By the way, do you see Ron DeSantis campaigning on this? Do you see anyone campaigning on this?
And I agree with you on every aspect of what you're saying. They know how wildly unpopular. I'm with you on all of that. I think I hate going to it and it's definitely a cultural thing. Like some cultures are like super into like, yo, here's, I want to charge you $1,000. And then the person walking goes like, oh, I'm going to get you down to 90. And then that happens. Like that's just like a lot of American like waspy culture is like, I don't want to be inconvenienced by a conversation. Like they don't like it. And it's hilarious the difference. And like if you go to like, if you go to Turkey and you go to a bazaar, they have ones that haggle and they have other ones that say, we don't haggle. And it's basically choose your own adventure. But I in this situation, I agree with you. Like it's very hard to justify it. I would say it's frustrating. There's a, what I like about buying products online, and I could talk about this forever and I'm sure you want to move on, but what I like about buying products online, it shows up, I don't like it, I send it back and there's no fee. But like for a car, where do I send it if there's no dealership if I don't like it? I want to touch it, I want to have it there. And then what'll end up happening is they'll give you that experience like you have at the Tesla dealership, but they put it in the mall so you can only sit in it and not drive it. And then you get it and then it comes to your house and you don't like it, you want to send it back, they're going to come pick it up. But now the dealership in the mall is the same exact experience as the dealership you would have if you went to go see Cal, for all the people who grew up here in Los Angeles.
I'm sure that you could find some comparisons. I don't think that we should leap to it's the exact same thing.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
I don't think so. And obviously, look, they're going to have, you know, showrooms or whatever. They're going to be places that are going to service the cars or whatever. But this has clearly been set up as just an artificial middleman who artificially inflates the price of the product and makes buying it more inconvenient.
And a devastating point you make about the Tesla thing, like that is absolutely a carve out for most favored nation status. Thank you to the people like Elon Musk and everything. And they'll never say anything like, well, it's better for the environment. They won't do that because they're right wingers and they can't. It's hilarious.
Although to that, there's one quote from the dealer network that we're going to read in just a sec. But I will also say, I understand that like some people watching this might own a dealership or something or work at it. And I get it, it is jobs. Things change. By the way, like people have been making jokes about how utterly horrible the experience of going to a car dealer is since before I was watching TV to hear these jokes. Has it gotten better? Has it needed to get better when they have protections, legislative protections in multiple states ensuring that they have this position and that you have to go through them to buy this? Why would it get better at that point? Anyway, this bill, you'll be shocked to find out, was written by lobbyists for the Florida Automobile Dealers Association. They didn't initially want the Tesla and electric stuff to be in there, but other lobbyists got in. So that's cool. Lobbyists brawled and got what they wanted. Dave Rambo, who's a lobbyist for the FADA, the lobby we're talking about, says the attempt by auto manufacturers to cut out the dealer would only result in higher prices and less customer service to the public. How exactly that is the case, I have no idea. Certainly, he's not saying. Could it result in less customer service? Potentially, for some people. I will say that I still remember when I was at a Chevy dealership years ago, negotiating, because you have to, over the first electric car that I wanted to lease. And as we were going back and forth, he tried to throw in a fun perk of, I'll give you free oil changes for 3 years, which I found to be a novel perk for a car that doesn't need oil, can't take oil because it doesn't have an engine because it's an electric car. I have to like teach him what his cars are at the dealership. Anyway, look, obviously there's some personal stuff in this, but a lot of people have had these experiences. I will also
his blood
say,
comes out his ears.
It's an electric car, you doink. How do you not understand that? Where are you gonna put the oil? Are you gonna pour it on the seats? Anyway, dealers have donated more than $2 million to Ron DeSantis in just the last 2 years. And by the way, we sometimes point out the money that politicians have gotten, and it isn't always such a huge sum of money that it's obviously gonna lead to a conflict of interest. But $2 million from as seemingly small a concern as dealerships in 2 years, $1 million a year, that is insane. They've also given nearly $250,000 to the Senate president in Florida, $50,000 to the state senator who sponsored the bill. I mean, it's just insane how much money is changing hands. Nobody, no conservatives don't want this. They may hate electric cars or whatever, so that should anger them even more that electric cars are getting special treatment. But the only wonder here is why haven't Ford and Chevy and all of them drowned out the money from these dealers? Anyway, it's frustrating to me. Let's move on though.
Yeah.
Final point.
There's a large capital investment in developing a competitive distribution model that they would have to do. In the US automotive dealership market size and share analysis from Mordor Intelligence, so take that for what you will, is $185 billion in 2018.
Okay, that's true. Good numbers supplied by the orcs, I think, there. And by the way, not having this bill does not mean that you can't have dealers. And that cars are, that the car manufacturers are the only people that can do it. All it means is that there's a choice that Chevy could set up a dealership. This is taking away that choice. It's saying you can't have both. You can only have the independent dealers. Anyway, with that said, let's move into some of the other stuff that Ron DeSantis has been getting into, starting with this.
Yeah, with all those problems, he has a real serious fixation on the state of Florida. I mean, I think it's just bizarre that he does that. But what I would tell him is, you know what? Stop pussyfooting around. Are you gonna throw your hat in the ring and challenge Joe? Are you gonna get in and do it? Or are you just gonna sit on the sidelines and chirp? So why don't you throw your hat in the ring and then we'll go ahead and talk about what's happening. So.
Strong words from Ron DeSantis. Yeah, you're pussyfooting. Why don't you get in so that we can talk about the things that are happening? This guy is gonna get eaten alive by Donald Trump. And I don't just mean that what you saw was an example of how he's not gonna be able to go toe to toe with Donald Trump. It's the fact that he's saying what you just saw there. Because Ron DeSantis spent a couple of years attacking the left. He can say anything he wants. It doesn't matter if they respond, and his base will eat up everything. It's super easy to do. The past couple of months, he's had to go up against Donald Trump, and it has not been going well for him. Donald Trump has been mocking him incessantly. And so what does he do? Does he refine his approach? Does he come up with a better attack? No, he goes back to attacking a Democrat. And in this case, a Democrat who's not even running in the race. It's just like, I don't like that you're punching me, so I guess I'll go over here where things seem easier. That is no winning strategy. Brett, what do you think?
His argument doesn't make any sense. He wants Gavin Newsom to get in the race to run against Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Why would he do that if he likes Joe Biden? Why, so in,
I don't even know.
Like Ron DeSantis' biggest fear in the world is not Donald Trump. It's Gavin Newsom. He is absolutely terrified that he'll have to stand on stage next to a guy who's super duper hot and is not afraid to go on Fox News and sit down with Hannity and just chat for a while and come back at him and say the stat that he's already said to Hannity, which is, hey bro, person for person, more people move from Florida to California than from California to Florida. Also, my economy's bigger than you. I've been married and dumped Don Jr.'s wife. Like, it's all there. So Gavin Newsom has a mix of everything that everyone in politics should be terrified of, which is he's an excellent candidate. I'm not talking about his policies. He's an excellent candidate. He has a huge economy that's about to pass Germany. And then everything that he has in his arsenal, he can beat Ron DeSantis on. And Republicans kind of like him. Corporate America loves him. Everybody loves Gavin Newsom except progressives and people. And the people who hate Nancy Pelosi can end up liking Gavin Newsom just because he's that good a retail politician. And retail just means like going shaking hands, kissing babies. Not to mention, Gavin Newsom looks down he knows he's got 4 extra years to do this. And so he's been putting together like a multi-red state tour and saying and going state by state and meeting people there, laying down infrastructure, looking for 4 years down the road. I get emails from the guy, I don't know how, being like Tennessee. And it's like, here's, and meanwhile, he's making insulin for people. You want to win red America? You give them free insulin along with, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that he's doing. He is wildly talented. He will climb and he'll run for president. And I think he would, I mean, as much as Gavin Newsom says that Donald Trump will clean DeSantis's clock, Newsom will clean DeSantis's clock as well.
That was well delivered. Good points. I'm not won over yet, and not in terms of the stuff that you said about Newsom, really, but about DeSantis's greatest fear. I'm actually curious what people think, because all of what you said is true. I don't think that DeSantis would want to run against Gavin Newsom necessarily, but I don't know that he's more worried about running against him, because at the very least he can go back to his stock stuff. He can talk about woke this and gay that or whatever. But with Trump, none of his best attacks really matter. And Gavin Newsom will embarrass him, but not in as juvenile and cruel a way as Trump will. Gavin Newsom is not going to imply that Ron DeSantis has a small penis. I don't think. I mean, you know, who knows what'll happen in the next 4 years.
He doesn't have to imply it. He'll just stand next to the guy.
Interesting. Okay, like I want to know what people think.
And like, why would you run against Donald Trump now if you're Ron DeSantis?
I understand, you would wait
unless you were scared of who you'd have to run against next.
Yeah, he could just be scared of, you know, the inevitable next thing. But 4 years from now, you know,
you never know what. Harry Lake. Feels hot.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm curious what people think. Who is he more afraid of? Send your comments. By the way, when I say that, you know, that he would prefer to be criticizing a Democrat and running from Trump, Gavin Newsom, I guess to his credit, is not scared of DeSantis. He said to Hannity that he would debate him. He wants Hannity to moderate a debate against Ron DeSantis. Which, look, I don't love Gavin Newsom, but that is a power move to say that not only would you debate him, but you'd let a right winger moderate it.
Yeah,
and
because they hate DeSantis too. They know he's a little wiener and he's ruining their Trump ratings.
Yeah, that's true. Trump, by the way, following the most recent batch of dozens of charges, is up 38 points over Ron DeSantis. So yeah, I understand why Ron DeSantis would prefer to talk about something else probably. Anyway, I know that we're way over, but we gotta do this next thing. Let's jump into this video.
There've been a lot of Republicans through the years, you know, who've said they would do things, but when it really gets tough, you know, are you able to stand your ground and do it? You know, right to life. We were able to deliver the heartbeat bill, which was a big, big deal. And you know, while I appreciate what the former president has done in a variety of realms, he opposes that bill. He said it was, quote, harsh to protect an unborn child when there's a detectable heartbeat.
So there's a lot that's dishonest there about what the heartbeat bill is, what it actually represents at 6 weeks, the electro, you know, the signal that is detected and called a heartbeat by the right, whatever. That's all we've covered that before. But what is true there is that Donald Trump is not necessarily as rabidly extreme on the topic of abortion as people like Ron DeSantis. He's still way outside of the mainstream compared to the American people, Donald Trump. But Ron DeSantis potentially has an in to attack Trump on this, and he's gonna use it. He was already criticizing him there. There's gonna be a follow-up question from the other dude. The dude, by the way, is part of the Christian Broadcasting Network. So Ron DeSantis knows who he's talking to here. And here's how he responds to the follow-up.
You mentioned abortion. Do you feel the former president's going soft then on abortion a little bit, especially in this area that you mentioned earlier?
Well, I think so. I mean, I was really surprised because he's a Florida resident, and I thought he would compliment the fact, you know, that we were able to do the heartbeat bill, which pro-lifers have wanted for a long time. He never complimented, never said anything about it. Then he was asked about it, and he said it was, quote, harsh. But you know, these are children with detectable heartbeats, and I think to do that was very humane, and I think it was something that every pro-lifer appreciates that we were able to get that done.
I'm sure some people who would call themselves pro-lifers probably do appreciate that. Of course, it does not have majority support. He knows that. And this is an interesting gamble. I think that this is the sort of area where Ron DeSantis has to try to make a policy-based play against Ron DeSantis. But it's a little bit dangerous because I don't think that Donald Trump is or isn't in favor of, you know, a heartbeat bill or whatever. I don't think he cares really at all. I think the reason he wants to back off a little bit rhetorically is because he can read the room, and he knows that running as rabid anti-abortion zealots is not a winning strategy electorally. But Ron DeSantis, to be able to run in the general election, has to get through Trump first. So he might have to pitch himself as more of a zealot on that topic to take out Trump, even if that would injure his chances of potentially making it past Biden or whoever afterward.
Ron DeSantis is like a rat in a maze who like is running fast, but going toward a dead end in every move he makes. Like, he thinks this is such a winning argument. The moment he's on stage with Donald Trump will say, "What are you talking about? Because of my moves in the Supreme Court, we overturned Roe versus Wade." Mm-hmm. And DeSantis also has this thing where he's like, "Oh my God, Florida resident, Donald Trump is one of my babies who lives in my state." It's like he bought Mar-a-Lago in 1985 and has used the mansion as a residence since before 1994. And do you think that he cares who the governor of that state is? He doesn't care. He just moved to Florida because that's what you do because of the weather, and he didn't like New York, which turned on him because he's a piece of crap and everybody else hated him. He was always a pariah. He was never really like embraced by the people Donald Trump thought he was like a representative of. Yeah. He just moved to Florida. That's it. And he's talking about like the tax code in Florida, like it's all Ron DeSantis. No, it's been that way a minute, dork.
100%. Yeah, look, I guess I wanted to give Ron DeSantis some credit in that he has at least found a potential avenue of attack, but I agree, like, it's gonna be difficult. I just can't wait for them to be on the debate stage. And it pains me every time that I think that it is likely that I will be on leave the first time that it's gonna happen.
Just know, yeah.
I'm gonna make a live video.
The things tap, like if you're looking at what normally happens during a debate, just seeing two people on stage, the margin tightens undeniably. That's why most people try to dodge debates. Usually they tighten unless someone completely face plants. Just having a debate when you're gauging expectations, which is mostly the game here, it's gonna tighten when they're next to each other on stage.
Okay, I wanna see it. Well, with that said, we do have to take our first break. We come back though, extremists have been on the move. We're gonna tell you all about it after this. Anyway, that did not help with my migraine, that social break, I will just say.
Sorry, John.
But anyway, with that,
a trooper.
Let's move into, I'm more a baby than a trooper, but thank you. Let's move into very serious news. We've been warning about the radicalization of people ready to use violence against the LGBTQ community for some time. Well, we have progress now on an individual who, a few years back, decided to take it upon himself to grab an AR style rifle and rid his entire community of anyone who dares to be LGBTQ. He's been sentenced to 18 years in federal prison. We're gonna give you a rundown of what was actually done, but you're seeing the individual right there, John Russell Howard, convicted by a federal jury back in February of a hate crime for firing at a woman who is a known lesbian, basically firing at her house wildly, and then going to target other LGBTQ residents in Basin, Montana. Chief US District Judge Brian Morris gave him this 18-year sentence. That's the update. There will also be 5 years of supervised release. Jesse Laslovich, US Attorney for the District of Montana, says Howard fired multiple shots into someone's home based solely on her sexual orientation, and only the heroic and brave actions of residents and law enforcement, as well as some good fortune, prevented a targeted mass shooting. It's a kind of conduct that has no place in Montana. This was way back in March of 2020. Amazing thing, it's like a week into the lockdown when this person decided to do this. Got two assault rifles, a hunting rifle, two pistols, multiple high capacity magazines taped together to accelerate reloading. Marched to the residence of a woman he believed to be a lesbian, began firing at her house, then targeted others. Again, it's so weird that a guy like this who wants to commit mass violence would go to the trouble of getting these high capacity magazines and assault rifles when you don't need that stuff. Any weapon will do. It's all the same, we're told. And yet another attempted mass murderer decided, you know what, I'm gonna go for the stuff the soldiers use. Weird that they inconvenienced themselves in that way. Thankfully, wasn't successful, did not, you know, rack up the sort of insane body count that he wanted, and will now be spending quite a bit of time behind bars. Brett, what do you think?
I would like to help anyone who is in a position where they feel like they have no recourse but to go take a gun and shoot up someone's house for this reason. First thing you should do is go to the doctor just to see if something medically is wrong with you. If the mental health disorder you have, it's schizophrenia, paranoia, something weird like that. And if they say no, you're fine, you've just been radicalized, shoot your penis off. Because that's the thing that's gay, and you need to get rid of that immediately. Just shoot your penis off. It's what's guiding you toward this hate because it's attracted to same-sex people, and you hate yourself for that. So just solve the problem and shoot your own penis off.
Brett is engaging in satire, everyone. He's not calling to violence, just correct, to be clear.
I'm not actually calling for violence.
So just to
I'm
be
just clear. Saying it'll solve the problem. You will no longer be, that's the root of the problem, your same-sex attraction.
It might.
And then
might
the other thing you could do is just like accept yourself and let people like be who they wanna be and love who they wanna love. I guess that's the other, actually you could do that first.
Sure.
So well, undo, actually, thank Brett. You, John, for helping me undo my satirical, thank but you. Still existent call to violence.
I'm gonna try to jump in just in case whatever happens after this gets my show canceled. We're actually, we believe in solutions. So later on in this segment, we're gonna talk about something that might help some of these people who are radicalized. But first, we are going to move to a different group of radicals. Let's jump into this video whenever we're ready.
And you guys, listen to the boots. You can hear it. Once you get inside, you can hear it.
Oh, nice. You remember those fellas? It's the Patriot Front. So look, videos like that of them training have gone around for some time, of them desperately trying to learn how to march in rhythm with each other, them doing something that shares some similarities with boxing, a variety of videos like that make them look really comical. And even when they go out into the field and they try to do their actual activism or whatever, they have often been ridiculed for how ridiculous they are. So in May, 100 of them marched in Washington, and one bystander was recorded yelling out at them, "You wear Walmart khakis, you are sloppy, you are not even matching, you all have different types of pants on, cargo pants are out, reclaim your virginity." It's pretty devastating stuff. Those are devastating burns. But I will say that while, you know, on site alone, they're ridiculous. The fact that even after years of probably many of them saying that it's gay to wear a mask or something, they do mask up for their Patriot Front stuff. That does not mean that they cannot accomplish some truly horrendous ends. And there are people who are trying to raise concerns about the Patriot Fund, as ridiculous as they might look. So Stephen Pigott is a researcher on extremist groups at the Western State Center, says, I think the group is morphing from a solely propaganda-based outfit to a much more violent one based on what we've seen over the past couple of years. They're trending to much more violence, more in-person direct actions versus putting up stickers under the cover of night. That doesn't mean that they're not gonna be doing the propaganda, and they have done a lot of it. In fact, they've been found to be responsible for the vast majority of hateful propaganda in the US in 2019, 2020, and 2021, but it is becoming much more active, much more violent. They are looking for some sort of big action. And so try to remember that just because they have no rhythm whatsoever, just because, you know, physically unimpressive or whatever, they look ridiculous, the khakis and all that. There are plenty of people that fit every one of those characteristics, but through the magic of assault rifles can still kill a lot of people. So definitely something to be concerned about. Bart, what do you think?
Yes, I think the biggest challenge they face is not reclaiming America. It's getting that many white guys to do anything in rhythm. You guys realize that in using the term boots on the ground, it doesn't mean just stomp loudly. There's so many other ways to have a sense of community than doing this nonsense. There are other ways. Go play Magic the Gathering. Go play games. John will teach you. Maybe that's our outreach program. And you know, you'll find a boo khakis. If you go find a, maybe there's dating you can do of people that'll open your mind. I'm just trying to say boo khakis.
Anyway, obviously these are people who had, I guess, reason to feel disconnected from community, from whatever. And unfortunately, they go online to find some sort of community and they're immediately preyed upon by the biggest, most radical grifters in the country. Convinced that rather than fighting against actual issues facing America, you know, access to health insurance, the ability to buy a home, climate, like stuff that's actually happening, instead it becomes like I follow a lot of Twitter accounts whose profile picture is Greek statues, and now I believe I need to reclaim modern Rome or something.
Unfortunately,
that translates into violence very readily.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of better ways to apply this sense of not belonging than doing that stuff. And then I'll just remind all these like white supremacist people that as recently as like 150 years ago, your kind of white people didn't like other people that you now would consider white, because that definition shifts. Like Eastern Europe and Western Europe, the English, the French, they all hated each other. They all thought that the other was impure. And the only way, guys, I hate to break it to you with this lesson on European history, the only way they became friends was by intermarrying their leaders and mixing. So there's like, you know, the Mountbattens are Greek, like all of that stuff. So what I'm saying is go meet some people, have a few drinks, breed, interbreed, and then we'll all be the same color, guys. Just another terrible idea from Brett, but I'm just trying to guide these people where they need to be based on their own logic.
Thank you for that. In general, before like live brainstorming your most insane ideas ever, could you give me like a few weeks of a head up so I could start to set up my backup plan?
Because honestly, I don't have you to tell me not to use that one. I just came up with that now. So before the breeding thing, it made a lot of sense.
It did. Often when people start talking about breeding, that's when it becomes an issue, actually. Anyway, we are gonna have to go to our next break. I will just let you quickly know because we unfortunately don't have time to dive into it. There was a study where a white supremacist was involved in the study. He took a bunch of MDMA, and it cured him of his white supremacy. Scientists question this as to what actually happened, but it did seem to help him. And we know that, like, you know, psychedelics and stuff like that can change people's way of thinking, open their mind and everything. Maybe a freer drug policy would get us out of some of the problems with extremists we have in this country.
Thank God John ended it with a weirder idea than mine.
This wasn't my idea, it was scientists' idea. Take it up with science. Anyway, we're gonna take a break. See you in a few. Okay, if you're not watching the live show, you don't know that I accidentally guessed Brett's garbage person during that break. And now that I think about it, how would that not be Brett's garbage person? Stay tuned. It'll become very clear, I guarantee it. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into more news, starting with this.
These so-called Trump advisors, what are they saying? That Trump obstructed justice? And it's absurd. Obviously, that isn't the case. I don't know who's telling the Washington Post that. The fact is Trump cooperated, right? He turned those documents over in the beginning of the year, those 15 boxes, and then they harassed him further. They issued a subpoena and he responded to the subpoena. They gave them more documents. Now, the objection is that, well, he didn't search properly or hid documents from his own lawyers. You know, I didn't think there was any persuasive evidence of that. So Trump fully cooperated. So the whole thesis of the story that somehow he didn't turn documents over and was indicted is false.
I'm not sure that I'm persuaded by the case being made there by AI generated Ray Liotta. He isn't a lawyer, bear in mind, that's Tom Fitton. He is responding, of course, to the news that broke earlier this week that he was in large part potentially responsible for Donald Trump now facing these charges, in that many advisors to Trump had been pushing for him to just give the documents back, send one of your lawyers to the DOJ, and you could avoid all of this. But unfortunately, he listened to non-lawyers like that guy, Tom Fitton, and instead he fought and he didn't comply. And what I love about the response from Tom Fitton there is there was this period where cooperating mattered, and then eventually there's a period where saying you cooperated doesn't matter because it's too late. And so back when it mattered, he's telling him don't cooperate. Then once the consequences are locked in, just say that he cooperated when that is irrelevant to the court proceedings. Like, why is Trump still listening to this guy? And I do mean still, he apparently had dinner with that guy this week. He's still sticking with him when that guy, whether he, you know, deep in his heart has Trump's best interests at heart or whatever, doesn't have the brain or the training to actually provide him with sound advice. But Trump is potentially gonna follow this guy to his utter doom.
Well, it's just someone telling Donald Trump what he wants to hear. And he's surrounded by people who follow Trump's example and just echo it back to him. Because, like, the idea of not admitting you've done something wrong is something that Trump really solidified as the main thrust of politics these days and best practices for people who get caught. Because they're like, you know, if you get caught doing something bad and then you resign, then what happens is the world moves on and then you have resigned. But if your whole brand is being a person who's like, no, I'm gonna do what I want, you guys are all fools and fakes and frauds. Meanwhile, being a fool and a fake and a fraud, but never acknowledging that you suffer from this huge imposter, you know, that you're a huge imposter, then you can benefit from that. That will reward you in the long run. So that's it. And I will point out that, yes, that was a great point that guy is like AI generated, if we can see him again, Ray Liotta. But the dude on screen with him is Con Draper. Like, good God, dude, 100%. He's in the Rebel HQ video I'm doing this weekend, so you should watch that. It's
Blaze Monkey gets credit initially for the Ray Liotta thing. But anyway, to the substance of it, like, it is such a different playing field on different parts of the political spectrum when it comes to, like, political commentary. Like, I often say that it's at face value, it's a similar sort of thing as to what we're doing right now. Like, the in that there's a camera, we're talking or whatever. But he can go and say, well, of course Trump cooperated. And knowing that the audience would be like, yeah, he did cooperate, even though he didn't give back the documents. And his lawyer says that he told him to pluck out the bad ones and make them disappear. And he literally said, what if we just don't cooperate, and then didn't cooperate? It's a laughable thing to say that he cooperated. On its face, ridiculous. But you can just say it because there's no standards whatsoever. Like, I would like to think, I am sure that sometimes in the past, I've been doing this for years, there have probably been things that have happened in the news that have been inconvenient to my worldview, to my, you know, preconceived notions. But like, I don't think I would ever feel comfortable saying something so utterly ridiculous as Trump cooperated when he so clearly did not, month after month after month, to his legal peril.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's, yeah, we've said it all.
By the way, if we could jump ahead to graphic three. Trump appears to think that it's as easy to get himself out of this as Tom Fitton does to explain it away. He just bleated that he's exonerated. Like, you can't just say that. That's not how that works. Like, that's not even like where they came out with their final report and it doesn't exonerate him, but he says that it did. We haven't even started the trial yet, buddy. You gotta wait. You gotta schedule that bleat and then send it in a year. You can't send it now. That's weird. Also, by the way, he lost another lawyer. Jim Trusty has left his legal team in his lawsuit against CNN, which I did not even know existed. Did they give him a town hall when he was suing them? It appears so, by the way. But anyway, we live in a weird world. Okay, with that said, we do not have much more time. People are saying Trump just declared bankruptcy. Yeah, that's not how this works. Anyway, let's jump to one more topic with what remains of this first hour. You've probably heard of No Labels. It is a centrist political organization that has been putting out messages the last few months, implying in a variety of different ways, and it constantly shifts, that they might have plans for the presidential race that do not revolve around supporting either the Democrat or the Republican. So, to hear them tell it, they don't like Trump and they don't want him to be elected, although their political strategy does not always imply that. And they do not think that Biden should be the nominee. They don't think that he's popular enough. They probably think he's a communist or something. And so they have previously said that they might be working to draft Joe Manchin to become president. Now, if you were trying to choose a candidate who could actually win, it wouldn't make any sense whatsoever to choose Joe Manchin. He's obviously not going to win the presidency. But if you were trying to take away just enough Democratic votes that the Republican would win, well, in that case, it would make some sense. But they don't like when you criticize them, saying that they're trying to create a spoiler. And so over the last week or so, they've been coming out with new versions of what their strategy is. And each one I find more amazing than the last. So after the Manchin thing, they say, well, you know what? Maybe we won't need Manchin. Maybe we won't need a candidate if Ron DeSantis wins the Republican nominating contest. So this group of, which has lots of Democrats on it, and wants to draft an ostensible Democrat in Joe Manchin to run for them, would also be satisfied with Ron DeSantis as president, just to give you an idea of what their priorities are. But now, after the criticism they've received from that, they're saying, oh, well, maybe we won't do anything. Don't pay attention to us for a bit if Biden is leading by enough come spring. So if Biden has a non-defined lead, then they'll back off and they won't run a third party candidate. And all of this is supposed to happen in America, where being up by 5 points is like a crushing victory. So Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, they also say that they, you know, what we're proposing here is more like an independent moderate like Ross Perot who takes from both parties. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Many analyses of the 1992 race, I think it was 1992, 1992. Had our dear friend, the reason that there isn't a second term from George H.W. Bush is because Ross Perot, James Carville said it, watch the War Room, it's an amazing documentary where he calls that the quote, single biggest act of masturbation in history is the Ross Perot thing, which is, you know, a lot of people got a voice, but it really ended up benefiting the other side who the candidate was least like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and look, I know it really does suck. I mean, like, I don't care if this hurts Joe Manchin or No Labels or whatever, but I do think that it sucks that the way the system is set up, you cannot avoid that in theory running a third party candidate in this sort of setting where the electoral rules are what they are, will generally result in that. that does suck. So understanding that that's the basis and that people are going to interpret your actions based on that, I think you have to be a little bit careful of at least about the way you communicate about your candidate and who you choose. If you want to imply that like Biden isn't representative and we need someone better, saying we're going to get Manchin, who most Democrats don't even like, or DeSantis, is not going to make you seem more reasonable. Anyway, that's unfortunately all the time we have at the first hour of the show. Thank you, everyone. More to come in the aftermath after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.